It is Thursday, the 21st of June. This is episode 123 of Digital Apps. It's Thursday, so that must mean that we're recording Digital Outbox, and indeed that is what we're doing, me and Ian.
One, two, three. I couldn't help it. Yeah.
I should have called it one, the episode 1, 2, 3. Sorry. Never mind. Good week this week for news.
Oh,
quite
loads.
Excited.
Absolutely loads.
Yeah. Including Microsoft being very Apple-like, has to be said.
If Bauer was here, he'd say, "I'm back, baby."
Yes. So basically, they've just come back from E3, where they had a lot of people there, all, you know, listening to what they had to say. And they're just before there's another announcement they're going to make at some point soon. I don't even know what they're doing. But they decided right in between, it was very important that they called everyone last second to a meeting. Or a keynote, that they didn't tell anyone what it was about. They didn't even tell them where it was. They just said Los Angeles and a set time. Turns out they have managed to keep a product quite secret, and this product they are calling Surface.
Which isn't just a product, but is a family of products.
A family of products, yes, that's a good... So, you know, they didn't announce everything about these products, but what we do know...
Well, they didn't really announce anything either, but
no.
We'll get on to that. Yeah.
So, but effectively, these products are a tablet running either Windows RT or Windows 8 with an attachable keyboard that is kind of acts as a cover. So like imagine an iPad smart cover that flops down and it's got keys on the inside of it. That's kind of what these things are. So it's like a reversed laptop where in a laptop you have a screen that sits at the top and a fat keyboard with the gubbins underneath. This one has got screen with the gubbins in and a thin keyboard that flops down. Interesting.
It's quite possibly the worst shambolic keynote that has made me so excited about a product in my life.
See, now I haven't seen the keynote, but I have heard
that
first thing it crashed. and everyone just looked and felt, sounded a bit nervous and uncomfortable.
It got off to a good start because Ballmer came on and he didn't pound.
That's
anything,
always a good start.
But it's just, I don't know. I think he's got like some sort of Iron Man suit underneath because his shirts always are puffy in multiple levels. It's not just like they're big. Anyway, he prattled on and talked about the history of Microsoft and all that kind of good stuff. Then eventually, it was this family device called Surface, and he was holding a tablet. And I'm really annoyed. Actually, I've not got the guy's name who came out and Steven Sinofsky. He was the guy that did the kind of main part of the keynote, and he was nervous and a bit stuttery. And it crashed on him, and he stumbled over his words.
Well, that's enough to make
And I felt really nervous. Sorry for him. Horrible. It was like me doing a keynote. It was just, you know, I felt really sorry for him. And when eventually he realised it was like, oh, he started making little noises as it wasn't working. And then he skipped.
Oh, well, this has never happened before. Yeah,
but
right.
He didn't just walk over and pick up another one. He skipped and ran. And picked up the other one and then started again. And I was like, oh, bless. And it was other odd things. Like they talked about how you could sit this down with its kickstand. And then he sat in a seat in a chair and leant back with one hand for 3 seconds and then stood up again. And it was like, what? It was strange. Strange.
So looking through the keynote then, but the product itself looks like an interesting take. So... it's positioning itself, they want to position it as a computer, effectively, but it's a computer that can act like a tablet. So effectively, you don't really need the keyboard when it's in the Windows tile mode.
And one of the things I found a little bit confusing is that they did refer to it for the majority of the time as a PC. They were quite insistent on calling it a PC, but then other people started calling it a tablet, which was interesting for me. because they always said the iPad should never be classed as a PC, because if it is, and you look at market share, it's like that is massive.
I think, but I think in the form they've got, this is more of a, you know, a PC. The sort of top level of it is running full version of Windows 8.
So I guess if people haven't seen it, it's a 16:9 screen basically, and it's 9.3 mils thick. Engineering wise, quite impressive. It's got this magnesium case, which seemingly is pretty much scratch proof and very thin. So a very thin alloy. And design-wise, what did you think? I actually thought it looked quite nice.
It's an interesting concept. I mean, they've coloured up all the sort of keyboards in, you know, in smart cover style, and it does look good. And they've used, you know, the use of magnets. But so I was pleasantly surprised by how it looked. Yeah, I wouldn't say blown away.
No, but I think certainly they've stepped up. You know, if you look at the other tablets that are out there, there's not really much that you could compare this with. I mean, first of all, when they showed you the cover and it was connecting by magnet, and you thought, well, that's fair enough. We've seen that before. But it was when they said, and by the way, this is a keyboard, and it's also a trackpad as well. And it's got a couple of mouse buttons.
It's got all that integrated, which is really quite clever. And they've got there's kind of a touch keyboard version,
but there's also a version.
Yeah, there's a version that's actually got full on keys. They're very low profile,
yes.
but they effectively are keys. Now they haven't let anyone type on it yet,
no.
And I think for good reason, in that it's just too early in development to, you know, they were kind of touting it as being, you know, a keyboard that's just you type on it as you would any keyboard. But I think they're still working on that.
But this was a big step for Microsoft. This is a big change. You know, they've always said
Microsoft of a software.
Yep, and they've always Microsoft and fair hardware. Enough. But they touted the first kind of 2 minutes of the keynote was all about here's the hardware we do, and they were talking about mice and keyboards and Kinect and the 360 and the Xbox and the cameras that they do. But they've always been a peripheral type, you know, manufacturer apart from probably the Xbox. This is the first time they've made a PC.
They're definitely making a move into the hardware market more and more, and I think it's they have to rely on you know, OEMs realizing their vision of things, and maybe they're thinking, well, actually we're gonna have to start doing this ourselves to actually truly get out there what we want to, you know. We can build as much software as you like, but if you don't make the hardware and that goes along with that vision, then And maybe Windows 8 is the perfect example, because it has got this tablet vision with also the PC in it. And this is the hardware that personifies that, which is that it is a tablet, but it can run as a PC.
And I think we've seen maybe similar with the way they've kind of semi-bought Nokia and the Lumia came out. Google, you know, with its Nexus, you know, it almost took that Nexus phone to really, I'm not saying kickstart Android, but really to say, by the way, here's hardware that can match the iPhone. There was a lot of other cheap Androids out there, but the design wise was always a bit lacking, and they kind of stepped it up, and I think you're seeing the same with Microsoft with the Windows 8 tablet. I think they've maybe looked around. It was interesting. A lot of the OEMs didn't know about this. You know, so your Dells and Asus and Acers are all pleading a bit of a. We had to watch the keynote to find out what was going on, and although Balmer said during the keynote, you know, we have talked to other people. And they answered afterwards and said that, but seemingly talking to other people was 2 days before. And it was a very brief phone call to say, we're doing some hardware, you'll find out next week.
If that's what Microsoft have to do to compete, that's what they have to do. And maybe they're realising that, and who knows? I mean, this is compelling, especially probably, well, I say especially probably, really committal here, to corporate markets, because effectively being a PC, you know, it can do the things that PCs can, including all the security that's necessary. And it's not an enclosed and totally locked down.
No, so I worked. I've been part of a trial at working and mobile working, and we've been really limited. I guess the kind of firm I'm in, we're limited in security, what we can and can't use. And the devices and the options that we've got at the moment are just awful, if I'm being perfectly frank. And this was like, oh, I could really see this
but
being
useful.
But we don't
know. But we have no idea that it is useful, because effectively it's just going to be a PC with all the things. And it's going to be a PC on compressed, ultra-compressed hardware. So it'd be interesting to see whether the hardware's around to do it. Interesting, we have no information on price, no information life.
That's not true. That's not true. So price...
Are you sure?
Yeah, yeah.
I've not heard anyone touting prices.
Well, price have said for the... And this is where it gets confusing. I think this is where... you see things like Google, or see companies like Google and Apple, and they usually, when they launch something, apart from Google I/O always seems to be a bit of a cluster word, and well, I guess we'll see next week. But there's this concept of RT and Windows Pro, and the Windows Professional version is the full Windows that runs everything, and the RT is the lower spec one that will come with Office, but nobody's seen Office for RT. And who knows what other apps will run in it? So it's very vague.
No, it's the tiled, what I'd call the tiled screen of Windows is what plus, you know, RT plus, effectively. So it's ARM processed. No,
but, well, and this is where it's ARM processors, but it's not the tiled one because you're getting Office with it.
I think they announced that they were going to release Office for that version, if you like. Yeah. So,
but the Office won't run in a tile. The Office that. Will. You know, and that's where it's going to get a bit confusing. But that hardware, they're saying, is priced similar to currently released tablets. So everybody's expecting $400-$600 price. They've said the Pro version is going to be Ultrabook price, and that's where it's going to get quite challenging, because that's a big price. That's anything from $900 upwards, and that's a lot of money. Yeah.
What's a MacBook Air when it's specced up properly?
Well, I think a MacBook Air is $900, and that's it specced up properly.
Okay.
Well, I'm just, if you look at this,
there's more than that.
No, well, I don't think so.
You can definitely spec it up more than that.
Oh, you can.
But it's all good, and it was an interesting change of angle from them as far as this secrecy, and I don't think they did it very well. But
the only thing I was going to say, the vagueness in pricing is nobody knows if you get a cover. Nobody knows if it's got any 3G connectivity. There's quite a lot of.
There's still a lot.
Nobody was allowed to actually touch the device. So afterwards, they got demoed it, but nobody's allowed to do anything with it because they're all basically demo units. There's no actual production made. Release date says the RT version around Windows 8 launch. The Pro version, that's 3 months after.
That's the end of this year, basically.
And the Pro is 3 months after. So you are a good, six, 9 months away from a launch.
Yeah, it's a long one.
And it did make me think of, I've called it this all week, the slate. I keep on thinking back to the slate and thinking they stood there with these products and here's what we're about to launch, and it just never happened.
Timing wise, it seems like they wanted to get something, you know, they wanted to announce this while all the other big announcements are going on, because they probably get a bit left out at time of WDC and I/O.
I wonder, you know, there's lots of rumours about tablets next week for Google I/O. And I wonder if...
So maybe, again... And it's funny that they seem to know about mapping and stuff, didn't they? Or Google knew about mapping. So it's almost like there's rumours going around all the time now about they're going to do this, they're going to do that. Okay, we'll nip in and nick that.
Yeah. But one thing, everybody's talking about Microsoft now.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good thing. Perfect. And interested. And it's not negative talk either. It's actually quite interested positivity.
That was very enthusiastic for the enterprise side of things. Very, very enthusiastic.
Yeah, yeah. Because basically that's the only option you've got right now, so fingers crossed.
I don't have many options, put it that way.
No. But they've also announced Windows Phone 8.
Yes.
Which effectively is an incarnation of what they're already doing, but they're moving over to their NT core, which should mean that it's actually a lot easier to develop something dual for your PC and also for the phone, because the actual core and calls and APIs and all that are similar. They've announced some they're going to integrate near field communication as is par for the core right now, even though that most people don't actually use it. Going to whack in some VoIP over there, so built in into the system. Including sort of Skype integration, and they've tweaked their interface to enable you to sort of adjust your tiles more to be a more personal experience. And I think basically that involves resizing the tiles that show up on your screens, basically.
What a way to kill a keynote. They spent 10 minutes talking about that, and you've just said, that, yeah, you can resize it. I think they just said it was smaller and there was more of them, and they were more visual. So it told you more,
yes,
and sucked your battery life more and killed your phone more.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. So the big news is that you won't be able to upgrade your old hardware to this. They're going to upgrade. They're going to have a point release on number 7 so that it rolls out whatever it can to its old hardware. But effectively, this is the Vista of the Windows development cycle, where you have to pretty much go on a new hardware route to get up to speed. But hopefully, now that they've moved over to this new core and decide on this new system, they will, going forward, they'll probably be able to roll out more updates easier, which I guess is a big plus for them and something they're aiming for.
But it's a big 6 months. If you think the next 6 months are going to be new desktop, a new format with tablets, and also the Windows Phone 8 as well.
We've talked about them going quiet for ages. Well, they've clearly been busy with these. It's going to come with IE10. It's running quickly. And again, they're trying to, because of this new NT, they're hoping that they're going to have more apps available, which is obviously a big killer at the moment because they don't have the big apps when you actually.
Well, was there not something that said they've got 100,000 apps now? Or was it 10,000? 10,000 is probably a more sensible number.
I guess they've probably got most of the big things covered, but not in the same way that you've got them covered on Android and iOS.
There you go. Windows Phone. They are. It's 100,000.
Yeah.
And as you're saying, I think they've got the big ones, but they have paid.
Yeah.
I know they were trying to pay developers to say, come and...
Well, they've paid and bribed, which is fair enough, to be honest. It's going to cost you to do it, so let's get you doing it while, it's a chicken and egg, and they're trying to break that down, aren't they?
Yep.
Another good probable, they're again going down the corporate route. Now that RIM is struggling, they could make a killing on this because they've got the ability to add in all these corporate type security, and they have got all those relationships with big corporations. And within purchasing offices, this probably makes sense.
Definitely. I think
You can lock down, tie into your networks, all the VPN stuff.
And I think if you can corporately develop an app that works in that like Metro interface and works in a tile and is giving you some nice, corporate, information that your execs are going to love to see, my share price is up.
An arrow pointing up on their
even
tile.
There's things at our place, we're all safety focused, so if there was a safety incident and everybody's tile went red, straight away, that kind of thing where it's very visual. You don't need a lot of information, but it's, if you could do that once and roll it out to multiple platforms, that's where they're going to start winning.
Watch out, we're going red.
Absolutely.
Involves changing the colour of the tile. Yep, so anyway, that's two big announcements, basically.
I feel sorry for anybody that's bought a Lumia.
Now that you've been told you're not going to be upgraded.
You're going to get a 7.8 upgrade that's going to give you the new kind of front end, and that's about it.
I've said it before, I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to say it now, that I think when you buy these pieces of hardware, you have to expect that when you want the new operating system, you buy a new bit of hardware. And as much as that doesn't really happen with Apple stuff, you at least get, maybe 2 or 3 years down the line. I would say most of the hardcore, and more and more we're seeing, if you want the latest software and Apple stuff, you still have to have the latest hardware.
I would say you're harsh, but you're consistently so.
It's hard. I mean, you don't get Siri on anything but the latest hardware, and that's turning out to be the biggest, new innovation, and that's only software. So I think you're seeing it more and more that you have to keep up with the hardware to keep up with the software, basically. Nokia, it's bad news for Nokia. They're going to have to cut another 10,000 jobs. Again, all these huge, huge numbers of jobs. But they're clearly not doing well enough to keep all their huge infrastructure alive.
And this is on top of 10,000 already announced, so it's yes, big, big numbers.
That's 20,000 people looking.
It just shows you the difference that Android and iOS have made.
And not keeping up with the curve on that yet.
Yep. And I mean, they instantly looked behind and just took too long to respond. It's taken years.
A bit of burying your head, so probably, I mean, all those kind of things. When you're in that such a strong position, you know, you do get entrenched in such a big company, it's really quite hard to react. Especially, you know, you're still earning a load of money. That's the thing, the numbers are still big. Quite exciting news this one, though. Amazon are starting to, well, they're launching their app store now in the UK. Yes. They've obviously had a presence over here before, but this is a wider launch. And does it mean that we're going to get the Fire? Are we going to get the Kindle Fire? I think it does. But
you'd think, I mean, we're... What
come
we
on,
now?
We've got to have it.
I'm just trying to think of dates. You know, we're, what, seven? Is that 7 months? It's last November, wasn't it?
All right, it's gone cold for me, so it must be at least that long, because I wanted it at the time. And
And I'm thinking... I'm actually thinking we won't get the Fire, but they'll release some sort of update, you know, over the next, I don't know, maybe sort of September, October time. They'll probably do some sort of new Kindle Fire, you know, a Fire 2 or something, or there'll be some change. And I wonder if we'll get that rather than, well, than this.
Yeah, but this is still the first step along that route, no matter what, isn't it? Getting the ability to sell stuff out.
And I think it's finally good we're getting the App Store. It's interesting, the Fire got a lot of press and a lot of sales early on. But
it's gone quiet, hasn't it?
It's dead, you know, and I think sales really dropped quite quickly. And I don't know if it was a combination of, you know, what can I really do with this? It is an Amazon shopfront, you know, that initial...
It's an Amazon shopfront and a media consumption device, as long as you're embedded in the Amazon environment.
I know my friend who picked one up had returned it. He just wasn't...
Okay.
The initial feedback was, this is actually really good, but after a bit more usage, it was like, oh, this is a cheap Android tablet. And he moved on.
Okay, then I don't want the Fire. I want the Fire 2. right, yes. The online snooping, as it's titled here. So the government wanting to have a look at who you've been calling, who you've been emailing, who you've been tweeting, who you've been Skyping with. That's going to cost us 1.8 billion. That figure likely to increase as well. That's not likely to be the full figure. In this time of austerity, they're spending all that money on something that even Radio 4 have come out and questioned. There you go. That's how much this is widespread. You know, people are aghast that anyone who wants to look at who you've been calling and stuff can really do that.
And the scary thing from when they first talked about this, what, 2 years ago? And at the time they were saying, well, you know, this is going to be a cost passed on to the customer. It's going to cost, you know, your O2s and Virgins, etc., and your BTs. And they're saying, no, we'll pick it up. Don't worry.
So they've said that they're going to cover the cost of storing. It's up to 12 months worth of records.
All I was going to say is, when has an IT government-led project ever come in on budget? And it scares me. It's like I'm looking at 1.8 billion and thinking it's probably going to be 4 or 5 billion. This is going to cost in the end. Because how can they cost up? How can they turn around and say it's 1.8 billion when they've got no idea the hardware, the data sizes are going forward, how much is going to need to get captured? It's ridiculous.
How are they going to keep this data secured?
No,
as well?
That's the other it's thing.
Because I mean, at the end of the day, it does. The whole problem that people have with this is that it doesn't take a great deal of request to get this information. You can just want to see it. You don't have to have any particular reason. Although they have said that it's supposed to only be used in for good reason. But once the data's there, people use it.
And we should be clear that what they're going to track is the first time details of the message. So like the time it was sent, like the heading, who you were sending it to, who you were liking, all that kind of stuff. But they're saying that the content isn't going to be captured. But if somebody wants to go and see it, they need a warrant, but they don't need a judge. I don't quite understand.
There's no difference there. No. That is what the case is now. And it's a bit like, and I think the best analogy is, it's looking at a itemized phone bill. So you can see the phone number that's being called. And that's exactly what it's supposed to be replicating, is the fact that people don't talk on phones anymore. And there aren't, you know, they can't get hold of those records. So they have to find other ways of being able to see those records. So is their argument. But it just, people are about just worried that fact there's no control and this data is all going to be stored and it's unclear how secure and all that kind of stuff is.
One aspect that was good is that initially they were talking about councils and quangos and all sorts of people having access to this. But they have actually locked it down to say it's the police, the Serious and Organised Crime Agency, the intelligence agencies and HM Revenue and Customs, and local authorities will actually face more restrictions than they have just now into what they can see. So they have kind of tweaked it locked it down to a more criminal element. But again, who's to say you've got somebody saying, I think he's, you know, I suspect him of X. I'm going to go and look at this.
Yeah, basically.
It's a lot of money. End of the line. A lot of money. And I don't think, I'd love to know what we get in return. You know, so how much, how many criminals get convicted? How much money from customs are we actually going to retrieve back? You know, like go and chase Vodafone's billions rather than spending all this money. Sorry, I'm going to turn into I'm going to get my socialist worker out in a minute.
Then again, you know, the devil's advocate says, you know, they do need that information and it's not the end of the world information. It's not actually the content. It is only the logs. Yeah. Okay. Never Seconds. Do you want to take us through this one?
This brought a tear to my eye, actually. I really did. So Never Seconds, I think we covered this before. So this was a young Scottish schoolgirl, Martha Payne, started a blog about a month ago. And all very simply, encouraged by her dad. And her dad was couldn't figure out why she was always hungry when she came home. So as a kind of part exercise of how to put something online and as part of a project, take a photo of your school lunch.
Well, it was a school project. It was actually initiated by the school teacher.
So the first pictures got so much reaction because they were awful. You know, it was like the kind of like two fish fingers and 10 bits of sweet corn. And that was a lunch. And
yeah, it sounds good to me. I'd take it right now.
So she initially got a lot of press and what I never realised, I never kept up with the story. What I never realised was that it picked up worldwide. School kids around the world were starting to send their pictures of their lunches. She was rating them all as well. She actually rated them all quite positively. So for all the ones that looked awful, she still said, taste 8 out of 10. You know, so there was never anything really bad. And I chuckled at a few things.
Kids are always positive, though.
Yeah, but I chuckled at a few things. You know, there was one that was like the number of hairs. And it was one of the posts, it was like number of hairs, one under the cucumber. And it was just, I honestly loved it.
That's one count that you really don't want to have a positive on, isn't it?
No, number of hairs, 15. You know, it's not a good sign. So one of the side benefits of the blog, she started fundraising for Mary's Kitchen. And she was looking for 7,000 and she'd got to 2,000. And she'd also got one of the celebrity chef, Nick Nairn. You probably love him. I don't really like him.
I have heard of Nick Nairn.
He's a bit of a cock. So he visited the school, and this was last Tuesday. He visited the school, and the last that's doing the blog's broken her arm. So there was a picture of him and her, a big flaming frying pan as they're cooking something. Big smile. So it's obviously set up for the paper, and it's a Scottish paper it's published in. And it was time to fire the dinner ladies. So obviously with the flame, and because she was cooking.
So it was a newspaper stirring it up.
It was a fairly innocent, to be honest, it's a fairly innocent title. But then this 9-year-old, so we should have said, this 9-year-old kid was then summoned by the headmistress the next day and said, we've been told that you have to start blogging. No more pictures are allowed. So she put up a post that night and says, I was brought in by a headmistress and I was told to stop. And then her father put on something just saying, it's a shame that this has happened and I hope to speak to the local council because it had come down from the council. And this took a life of its own. It was all over Facebook. It was all over Twitter. It was all over BBC. It was
perfect internet.
It was, wasn't it? Everybody was like, how can you pick on a 9-year-old girl? They already had roughly 2 million hits and that had taken 4 weeks. And by the lunchtime the next day, they're up at 4 million hits. You know, it doubled. The fundraising was up at 30 grand. And on a live interview, the Argyll and Bute Council head came on. The Radio 4 guy lambasted him for being a bully. What have you got to say for yourself? And he went, well, actually, we've had a change of heart. We've had a think about it. It's the wrong thing to do. We've reversed the decision. Martha can blog.
Why did you make the decision in the first place?
And I think it wasn't him. I think it was one of these. There's been a couple of stories about our girl in Butte about how they've been monitoring social networks and sacking people because of comments, etc. So I wonder if they've got a bit of a Nazi in the team. I just love it if I can mix Tory, tax and Nazi in any one podcast. I just think it's like gold. It's fantastic.
But so yeah, so
and I'll be honest, like, see that blog. It's fantastic. I've read the whole thing. I just thought that is what a great kid. What a great little project to be doing. And it's the amount of traffic from around the world she's getting. I mean, that...
See, oh, crikey, O'Reilly. You've got a traffic ticker at the bottom of the blog and it is just ticking over so fast. It's unbelievable.
But it's the... See the post when she says, I have to stop. It got 2,000 comments. It wasn't even that there's loads of visitors. It's the fact that she's getting so many people saying, this is a try. So... The outcome, she's now got 83 grand or 84 grand she's at now that she's raised. So she's blown her 7,000 target by miles and she's back blogging again. So there's more pictures were up yesterday and the day before, which is great.
And I imagine the school dinners are probably starting to look better.
Well, one of the other things they found out was that they were actually allowed, and it says never seconds, and, you know, that's the blog title. But they were never allowed to get extra fruit and veg, and they are. They're allowed to get unlimited fruit and veg, so there's a lot of byproducts from this as well.
Power of the internet.
Exactly.
Power of the
and
press.
And it's interesting, even the way she blogged it, there was lots of visitors here today. This was one of the best ever lunches, you know, and it was just so innocent. It's so innocent, but it's like, yeah, I wonder why that is. So if you haven't looked, neverseconds.blogspot.co.uk. It's just a lovely, heartwarming story.
There you go. With a nice happy end. Louise Mensch, now she reckons that she can launch a rival to Twitter because Twitter's got it all wrong, apparently. I'm going to have to paraphrase here, but basically, Louise Mensch, so she is a Tory MP, and this is her first foray into being an internet entrepreneur. And she's decided that she wants to have a Twitter-like service, but you're allowed more characters, and it's going to be categorized discussions. So imagine a forum that's got limited characters, and that, I think, probably paraphrases the whole idea.
But in a forum, you can usually start your own rooms.
Yes, but you have to go in the right rooms for your chats.
You forgot to mention the name of this as well.
Yeah, well, this is quite funny. So this is Louise Mensch, and it's going to be called Mention.
But it's
apparently nothing to do with her name.
No, because it's spelt differently. Because her name has a C in it, and Mention doesn't.
There you go. I'm not even going to read out how you spell Mention. If you're really that interested, you can go and find out.
No, you can't, because it's all in America right now.
Okay, well, there you go. That's useful.
So they hope to have it out, I think they said, by the Olympics.
I think she should probably concentrate on being an MP more. And
she's been quite an effective MP. She's got a lot of press.
Good for that.
I think they should more focus on why she jumped from the Labour Party when their fortunes were declining and joined the Tory Party.
Never mind that. More importantly, let's talk about iPlayer.
Yeah.
Because they have released a new service which enables you to effectively watch live shows but also rewind back through about up to 2 hours of live shows, so it's almost like a Sky Plus type affair, but you don't have to have been watching the show to start with, so you can get back late. I've missed the beginning of Big Brother, except for that's not on BBC, but you know. It's like bad check. You missed the beginning of your favourite BBC show. You can just press the rewind button, get to the beginning of it and start there, as long as you want to watch your TV through your computer.
Take that, Betamax.
Take that. I think that the speed that things are moving is pretty incredible in TV arena. And I don't think we're far away from having that true on-demand watch what you like when you like service. I mean, I think we're pretty much there now, even with our Sky Pluses, which is obviously old technology now, but then added in with all these on-demand services, I think we're nearly there.
Well, if you think of that UView service, if they do eventually launch it, and you have...
They're going to, aren't they? Yeah.
But imagine that kind of interface. You know, you're just going to come in and go, yeah. Oh, I've missed it. Rewind. Oh, wait, so watch that. Watch it. And it is. It's phenomenal. It boggles my mind because the amount of bandwidth this almost cost. It sounds such a simple thing. You know, I can rewind a TV program. But it must be boggling.
All the data there. The only, say, point on this is that people still do want to watch live stuff, and I guess that's why this service is quite important, because there are still many more people watching just live programs and just, you know, turning on their TV than are watching on-demand stuff. I think we will see a tipping point at some point, but yeah, at the moment that's not.
And what I find, I don't know if it's, I mean, sport's an obvious one, but it's your things like Apprentice, it's things that see the whatever program everybody's talking about, you can't afford to not watch it live or within 1 or 2 hours, or else it's almost ruined.
You certainly have to hold your breath if you've got it on Sky Plus and you're not going to be back for a day.
Yeah. And even things like Game of Thrones, if you didn't watch it quickly, somebody spoiled it somewhere. Mad Men, I found somebody was, it was just by chance, because you were 2 or 3 days behind America, somebody would tweet something up or can't believe such and such, and you're like, oh.
Whoops, didn't want to read that. Facebook, they've bought face.com.
Yep, so evil Facebook is going to be evilly detecting your face and evilly tagging you automatically from now on.
And in the mobile arena as well.
Yep.
So effectively, you can take a picture on your mobile, it can upload, and it can suggest straight away who the people in the picture might be.
I still got, for all Google's goodness, with their glasses, and they say they'll never do it, somebody will launch an evil set of glasses, which will be hacked
to
walk down the street and just pop up everybody's profiles.
This is Ian.
And you can just, they'll sell that
as a positive.
Oh, yeah. It's going to happen. It is getting quite Minority Report, you know, with all the Kinect see-through and displays. And that was one thing in the keynote, the Microsoft thing. The DJ had a big see-through DJ screen. It looked fantastic. Sod that Surface thing. I almost still call it Slate.
This is brilliant. World's first IE7 tax. So enjoying the sentiment of this. This is an Australian developer who makes online shops, basically. And they have decided to pass on the cost of having to make their site compatible with IE7. And anyone arriving on the site who's using IE7 has a percentage charge added of 6.8%, representing 0.1% for every month since the IE7's launch. And so therefore it's going to go up over time. And basically, if you don't want to pay the price, you better upgrade your browser. And it's such a clever, clever little twist. Because obviously no one's going to do that, but maybe they'll encourage people to upgrade their browser. Love it. And I want to see everyone do this.
I was so tempted to put this in as a world first tax on Windows, and just to see if you'd notice as I prattled through the story.
I just absolutely love it. If I could do this to my customers, I would.
And what amazes
me
is
how you're going to pay more.
But it's how quickly, because IE6 was only getting talked about a couple months ago about IE6 must die. But it's people are now saying, "Well, come on, let's get IE7 out of the way."
Let's get
as well.
All the way now that we've done IE6, which IE6 was a big problem as we've talked about at length. About its integrated ActiveX components and stuff like that, which people ended up relying on and didn't follow through. But yeah, IE7, quickly followed up by, because that's a much better browser compared to IE6, but it's still a lot worse than the others.
Yeah.
So let's get rid of it. Chop it.
Die in a fire.
Rob on. Please. That is the end of our podcast today, because we have no picks. We haven't succeeded in making it truly short, but it is shorter than last week, so there you go. If you want to find out more, though, you can do at www.digitaloutbox.com. You may email us. You have permission to email us, info@digitaloutbox.com, and you can also tweet or Skype us at Digital Outbox. I'm on Twitter as GZUK, and where can we find you, Ian?
I'm on Twitter as Sweeper. My website is END.net. And just as a small follow-up to last week, the Retina display is gorgeous. I am insanely jealous of it.
You've seen it.
But I have went for the ear instead of the retina. No, I didn't lick it. I got a very nice demo from one of the chaps at the Apple store who was like, oh, look. And it is gorgeous. It is.
So you did go with the head decision rather than the heart decision then?
And you know why? It's thanks to you, young Christopher. It was your last words. It was your remember why you were going to buy the ear. I've no doubt Apple are going to move to like retina everything, you know, within the next year or two. But if you think, you know, it's already, I mean, if you think how long the iPad takes a long time to charge, you know, and it's a retina screen, it's gorgeous. And I just think that eventually it will come to things like an Air, but I don't want, it did feel quite heavy.
Look, enjoy your Air for the next year, because it's not going to be happening in the next year, is it?
And lots of apps, fair enough, I think the smaller Mac apps will update quite quickly, but lots of apps are going to take their sweet old time to get updated to take advantage of it.
Well, because otherwise they'll be catering for about two people.
Yeah.
Very rich people.
So an absolutely lovely screen. And when you see it, it's a bit like when you see the iPad screen. It's like once you've seen it and you go back to the old one, you're like, ah.
Yeah, I've heard it makes the internet look bad though, so.
It makes images look bad. And if you're using Chrome, it makes text looks bad. But see, if you use Safari, the text looks gorgeous.
Right, so they're waiting again for those people to catch up. Anyway, so that's all good stuff. I look forward to when you receive your Air. I'm sure you'll be a very happy boy. That is it. Speak to you next week. Bye.
Bye.